Doom do 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 do. Hi, plant friends. Welcome back to episode 72 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hello, 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 my plant friends. I hope you're having wonderfully planty weeks as per usual. I am currently in Detroit and so surprised at how much I love this city and how planty it is. The WeWork here is one of the plantiest WeWorks I've been to so far. It's got like exotic philodendrons all over it, not just like your classic fiddly fig. So I'm having a lot of fun here in Detroit. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode on low light plants and not just your general low light plants, but more interesting and rare low light plants that we can bring into our indoor jungles. And I hope you're enjoying the Bloom and Grow Radio YouTube show, which is my new little planty passion project. I'm trying to bring you guys visuals for some of the episodes that we have and also just some of my personal plant struggles and wins. And I guess this week's episode, last week was how to make your own moss pole. This week's episode, which you can find and subscribe, please, on the YouTube channel, is my Monstera Madness repot. So I had put all three of my Monsteras under my Soltec lights in my corners of my apartments. And I don't think I realized how happy the Monsteras were going to be under those lights. And they have just exploded with growth. And the episode is my journey of repotting these monsters that were just so pot bound. I have some shameful plant parent moments, but I hope you enjoy it and watch, you know, my process for how to do that. So if you're interested, click the link in the show notes and don't forget to like and subscribe if you want to see more videos of that. Thank you to all of my Patreon plant friends for supporting the show. We have one new patron. I can never decide if it's Patreon or Patron, but we have one new plant friend, Cassandra Jones. Thank you for joining our community. I love seeing this community of plant friends growing. You guys are all supporting the show and you are covering the editor for the show this season so far. And as the community grows, what you guys will be able to help me accomplish will also grow. So thank you. If you're interested in becoming a patron, the link is in the show notes. I am so excited about today's episode, plant friends, because so many of you have outdoor gardens as well as indoor gardens. And Joe Lample of joegardener.com and Growing a Greener World is one of my favorite outdoor gardeners. He is a dear plant friend and mentor to me. You might remember him from episode 5 of the podcast. He came on the show to teach us how to have a living Christmas tree. So the holiday season is coming up. If you're interested in learning how to have a living Christmas tree that you can then plant in your yard, Joe breaks that down for us on episode 5. But Joe is an unbelievable gardener. He has a farm with an insane garden in Georgia. He's an unbelievable guy with so much knowledge on outdoor gardening, and I'm fortunate enough to have his cell phone number where I can text him when I do silly things in my outdoor balcony garden. But I wanted to have a larger scale conversation with him about some outdoor gardening projects for the fall. I think I had only really thought about gardening season as spring and summer, and I'm learning that fall is an entire season where we can continue growing edibles and growing things in our gardens before we go dormant for the winter, and that's on the East Coast where I'm at. And Joe had some great ideas for things that we could grow. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I'm not going to tell you that much more about it because Joe is so much more knowledgeable than me. I want him to tell you. But for those of you who don't know Joe, he is the Joe behind joegardener.com, which is an amazing website with literally anything you want to know about outdoor gardening, especially if it comes to organic, sustainable, any plant you want. He has a blog and a podcast for it. He's one of the OG podcasters. He's had podcasts on gardening forever. And he also is the executive producer and host of the Emmy award-winning PBS series, Growing a Greener World, which is wonderfully put together and so insightful and such a wonderful educational resource. So you should all go check out joegardener.com, read all of his blogs. We talk about some of his blogs in the episode today that are going to be linked in the show notes. And I hope this episode inspires you to try something new to grow outdoors in the fall. I think I'm going to try garlic. Speaking of gardening in the fall and fun planty projects to do in the fall, a really fun planty excursion to do in the fall would be staying on a planty houseboat. Plant friends, in Norfolk, Virginia, there is a beautiful marina with a private dock that has two houseboats filled with houseplants that are available to rent on Airbnb. Can you believe it? The houseboats are under a floating bed and breakfast, which is the planty side hustle that Nicole, one of our listeners, has started. And it's made up of two boats. The Lois Delane hosts two people, and it's perfect for a couple's getaway. And the Stanley Lee has two bedrooms and sleeps up to six, and is perfect for a family outing or a group of friends. Or you can do what me and my friends did, is rent both and do a whole dock takeover. Both boats are filled with plants. They have the cutest jungalow aesthetic and tons of adorable and comfortable outdoor and indoor space to lounge around. So rent these houseboats for date nights, overnights, girls' weekends, photo shoots, or honestly, Plant Friends, just an opportunity to disconnect on the water for a minute. If you are in the Norfolk area and you're interested in coming aboard, Nicole is offering 20% off by writing her directly and saying that Maria sent you. So check out the LoisElaineHouseboat.com. It's in the show notes. Make sure to write her and tell her Maria sent you for 20% off. Also, I left a houseplant on each boat with a Bloom & Grow radio sticker on the pot. So the first person that stays on the boat and sends me a photo of the Bloom & Grow radio plant will get a free Bloom & Grow radio mug. So visit theLoisElaineHouseboat.com and write Nicole for your 20% off your stay. All right, plant friends, here's Joe. Joe, welcome back to Bloom & Grow Radio.
Hey, how are you, Maria?
I'm so excited to have you back. You were one of my original gets for the first 10 episodes of Bloom & Grow. So I think you were on like episode 5 of the show on how to grow and then plant a live Christmas tree. I hope all of our listeners listened to that episode. But if not, welcome back for a broader conversation topic.
I am excited. We go back a while now. I feel like we've been old friends. We've really gotten an opportunity to see each other in person a few times since then. Mm-hmm. And I love how that works. And we've had many a good chat along the way too. So thanks for having me back.
We're plant friends IRL, plant friends in real life. But yeah, so for our planty community, you are my like go-to outdoor expert. You have the most amazing farm in Georgia. So I'd love for you to just tell us how you got to be Joe Gardner, the titan of the gardening industry with a PBS show and Emmy nominations and all that good stuff. So what's your journey been?
Well, you know, as a kid, I loved gardening. I didn't know it until I discovered one day when I broke a branch off my dad's shrubs that he was working on all day. I didn't want to get in trouble. I didn't want to get caught. So I just took that broken branch and stuck it in the ground right by the parent plant and covered it up with soil. This is in Miami, Florida, where everything grows. And then, you know, I went about my business, totally forgot about it, and came back about, I don't know, a month or two later and looked for that broken branch because I remembered it. I had broken it, but I couldn't find it because the branch wasn't dead anymore. I just assumed it would be totally dead, but it had sprouted and started new roots and everything. Yeah. And that's, I just did what you did. I said, oh my gosh, what's happened here? And I had to know more. And being the curious gardener that I am, I took it from there. And I started literally at 8 years old studying plant propagation and growing things from seeds and cuttings. And I had roses and vegetables and I just never looked back. And so here I am, you know, decades later, and every day in the garden is more exciting than the day before. And tomorrow will be more exciting than today. So thank goodness, at some point in my grown-up life after college, entered the business world, but I had an opportunity. I got an email from basically HGTV's team looking for a host on a new show they were doing. In a long, big search, national search, I ended up being the one they picked for this show about how to grow food. That turned into what was supposed to be just a 1 year, 26 episode series. It turned into 3 years and 52 episodes, and it really went well. And the show only retired because we ran out of things to teach people to grow. They wanted to keep it going, but we didn't have anything else we could come up with to teach them. So that retired, but I learned a lot along the way being the on-camera talent. And I learned how to, I thought I might know how to produce. So I tried it. And next thing you know, I've got this series that we just finished our 10th season of production for Growing a Greener World, which is on PBS all over the country and beyond. And that is really an organic gardening show. We go everywhere to tell stories, but we just, I think we're like, we're over 200 episodes and we just got back from Halifax, Nova Scotia, but we go all over. And first new episode starts airing September 7th. So it's coming up. But anyway, through all that and books and podcasts and, you know, I just love teaching people how to garden. And so thank goodness I've been kind of the ones, the one of the front facing people out there to be able to do that.
And I think, too, what's important mentioning is you are an organic gardener. You're even a niche in the gardening space. So what are the things that are important to you in your garden?
My thing is just understanding that soil is everything, and having life in the soil produces the abundance above ground. So I always say, feed the soil and let the soil feed the plants. And you really can't do that when you're pouring a bunch of chemicals and pesticides and herbicides on your plants and into your soil, because that just kills that life down there. What people don't understand, they may just look at that stuff beneath their feet and think it's dirt. And sometimes it is, but dirt is just lifeless minerals and things. But soil has billions of microbes and beneficial things in it per teaspoon. And so that's really what's generating what the plants really need. It's like you and me eating a whole foods diet versus junk food. Yeah, we can satisfy our hunger pains with junk food, but how good does that really serve our bodies long term? And when we garden organically and we feed the soil with good inputs, well, that's really producing solid, long-lasting outputs. And it's also better for the environment. That's my other thing, is I'm all about taking care. You know, Mother Nature gives us so much, and I think it's our job as stewards to give back and take care of this planet and leave it better off than we found it.
Absolutely. I love that. And what's your personal garden setup? Because you've got quite the situation going on down in Georgia.
Yeah, I'm in just north, you know, I'm basically in a North Atlanta suburb, but I'm in an area where there's a lot of land, where everybody that lives around me has small farms, and I have a small 5-acre farm. And on that, I have a big giant raised bed garden. I have 16 raised beds. They're basically 4 feet wide and 12 feet long, and they're 18 inches high, and they're full all through the year. I love growing year round down here because we don't get blankets and blankets of snow. So, you know, you can get away with growing cool season crops down here all through the year. So I love him. I love my edibles. I love eating healthy. And because it's all organic, you know, it's, you can just eat it right off the plant. And before it even comes in the house, you've consumed half your harvest, which is not a bad thing.
That
definitely happens with cherry tomatoes. And then outside the food garden, I have, you know, lots of perennials and different flowers that attract beneficial insects and pollinators to do my pest control for me. I love that. Plus, they're beautiful. But then outside of that, I just have lots of beds around my property that are full of native plants, which, in addition to being beautiful, they serve more than just that function of beauty, which, you know, when you think about maybe our parents' generation and so forth, a lot of them or us, you know, we were just putting stuff in our landscape that just looked good, but it didn't do anything else really. And so I'm a big proponent of helping people understand that you can have the best of both worlds with native plants, because yeah, they look good too, but they also are what a lot of the birds and moths and caterpillars and things that the birds and other wildlife depend on need to survive. And so there's this co-evolution taking place with this relationship between native plants and the insects and the biodiversity that we need for health around here. And so I know I'm going a little deep there, but it's what I'm all about. And, you know, it's what I try to teach and incorporate into all my messaging.
I know we both have had Dave from Crown Bees on our podcast. And he's just really opened my eye. I feel like I look at bees and butterflies completely differently now.
Yes.
And, you know, you talk about plant blindness and waking up from plant blindness, but I also feel like I've woken up from pollinator blindness. Now I'm not only walking down the street and looking at bushes and flowers, I'm looking at, oh, what pollinators, what's buzzing around it, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the same thing with the soil I just talked about. You know, until you really open people's eyes to what's going on beneath your feet, they just think of it as dirt. And that's what typically people call it. But I can't even imagine calling what's in my garden beds dirt. I can't even think of that word anymore, because it's soil. There's so much more to it. And so opening people's eyes and just helping them get a new perspective on it just changes everything.
Yeah, even from just my personal perspective of, you know, indoor gardening, I feel like you can make an argument that maybe soil health might not be as important, but I definitely went through that conscious change too when I moved from, you know, the standard, I'm not going to name names, but like standard potting mix to an organic, you know, Espome Organics is actually today's sponsor, but, you know, I use them because I decided to become more conscious about what I was putting all my plants in. And what I was keeping in my house, you know, what was affecting the air in my house too. But so you're Joe Lample, but the brand is Joe mm-hmm. Gardner, and the website that has yeah. the most unbelievable blog. You do such extensive blogs. You have a pod. Mm. You've been in the podcasting game longer than anyone, I think, in the garden space.
Maybe. Yeah.
Joe Gardner podcast.
The Joe Gardner right. show. Yeah.
The Joe right. Gardner show. Then yeah. you have Growing a Greener World on PBS. Then you yep. have your Instagram. And if you are, if Plant Friends, if you are interested in seeing the garden that Joe's talking about, he does really fun garden tours on his Instagram TV now. So you could yeah. go check out Joe Gardner.
At Joe Gardner, right. Yeah.
Those tours, I remember seeing those tours being like, holy moly, Joe, that's unbelievable. You, I like, no, but then I see it and I'm like, oh my God, it's unbelievable.
I love doing those, you know, real time stuff. It's the real deal.
Yeah. So you've been my plant friend for a while, and I'm fortunate mm-hmm. enough to have your phone number when, you know, my blueberry bush burned horribly this summer.
Yeah.
And I texted you a video screaming for help, you know, what do mm-hmm. I do? But I wanted to bring you on the show to be our plant friends resource mm-hmm. for fall gardening, because I know personally, I feel like I don't know anything about growing things outdoors, right? I have, you know, small container gardens on my tiny balcony. I can grow herbs and a few edibles. And to me, the growing season means the spring and summer. And I think mm-hmm. you and I have been going back and forth. And what's kind of been illuminated for me is I've been avoiding an entire season in which I could continue growing on my balcony with really fun projects and fun plants and fun things to do. So mm-hmm. I wanted to have you come on to kind of talk to us about, number one, you know, the traditional growing season is over. So are there things that we should be doing to be, quote unquote, putting our garden to bed? And then what can we be doing to continue, you know, to extend the growing season a little bit longer?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because I encourage people to open their eyes to the fact that just because, you know, summer is over, the growing season to me is absolutely not. And I'm talking about, I don't care where you live, because like I said, I got back from Nova Scotia last week and it's really cold up there for 7 months of the year. But we featured a gardener who is harvesting from her garden 365 days a year, and she might have to move snow out of the way to get to it. But you can do this if you provide the right environment. So there's a whole new season out there, and people, you know, some of the things that are favorite foods of all don't even grow in the summertime. Like for me, that would be, you know, kale and lettuce and spinach and beets mm-hmm. and Brussels sprouts. And the things I really love to eat besides homegrown tomatoes are things I got to start planting in this, in like the fall rather than the summertime. So before we get to that though, for those that, you know, maybe have balcony plants or things in containers and they don't really see themselves doing anything in the fall, I would just say, make sure that you take those containers. A lot of those things are not cheap anymore. You know, they've got some really nice containers out there. And if you leave them out there and then the soil gets wet and it freezes and then it expands, it could break your containers. So get those inside, at least the, you know, the ones that are made out of clay or terracotta or breakable. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. And then that's really about it as far as putting the garden to bed, because there
so
used to be
no
this,
like amending of the soil kind of.
Well, I mean, okay. So this is another thing. If you've got an outdoor garden and raised beds and so forth, like if you can get compost or you can make compost, one of the best things you can do is put that into your garden beds in the fall. Cause sometimes there's just not that much to do after everything settles down. But mm-hmm. you heard me talk about feeding the soil. Well, the way you feed the soil is you get compost or make compost, which is the best ingredient you can add to soil because it has all the nutrients and other things that the soil and the plants need. But you put that, just spread it across the top of your garden. That's amending your soil. That's making your soil better for the next spring or whenever you're going to garden again. You fed that soil with nutrients that are going to live through the winter and persist and be there and ready to go when you put the next round of plants in the ground. So what I was going to say though, you know, we used to call it putting the garden to bed, and it was this big thing about cleaning up and cutting your plants back and raking away the mulch and all this stuff. But it's interesting, in the last few years, we're not talking about that so much anymore, because we realize that many of these beneficial insects and bugs and critters that we need to do our pest control and that are good for our garden environment, they live in that debris and that stuff that overwinters. But if we're cleaning it up and throwing it away or putting it in the compost pile, we're also running the risk of destroying a lot of those important players that we need to help us, especially in our organic gardens, do that work next spring. So tidying up, you know, it's okay to tidy up, but don't feel the need to get every little piece of debris and leaf and cut back seed heads. That's another thing. For people that have plants that produce flowers, those flowers are gorgeous until they die, and then they're just these brown things on top of stems. But those brown things have lots of seeds in them, and then the birds depend on those for their food source. That's their primary food source in the wintertime, and it has lots of oils and nutrients that they need. But if we've cut those back because we don't like the look of them, well, we've just taken away a major food source that, you know, the birds kind of depend on. So that goes back to not feeling the need to have to clean up. Enjoy that texture and that contrast in the wintertime from those seed heads. To me, they're beautiful out there. You know, you look, just have to change your perspective and open your eyes to looking at it a different way. It's not a dead flower. It's a food source for beneficial creatures.
Yeah, that reminds me of, I just watched a great on Delta. I think I told you about it. This new movie that came out called like The Biggest Little Farm or something.
You told me and I watched it on Delta. Yeah.
So the thing that blew my mind about that video, it's a documentary about this farm that wanted to be like a completely sustainable environment and how they just kept saying, zoom out, like take a step back. And yes, we have slugs all over our citrus trees right now, but we can't just eradicate the slugs. We have to bring in the ducks to help eat the slugs, you know, like to zoom back and try and figure out how to naturally fix things. And that's kind of very similar. Whereas, you know, humans want to just have a pretty garden, but you need to respect the full life cycle of the plant and what that full life cycle, including the death of it and the, you know, the flower not being so beautiful anymore, is as important to the environment as the bloom or the, you know, the vegetative stage.
I was so proud. I was so happy that they talked about it in that way. I mean, that was such a good message that they take you through that. What was that? It's like 7 years of their life on that farm and how to figure it out. And they did.
It is so good. That movie is so good.
Yeah, I have to tell you just a fun little aside on that too. The woman that's featured in that movie,
The Little Farm.
Yeah, right. The wife that's in that movie, who is, you know, when they lived in LA and she was the cook and all that stuff. She was actually somebody that when we were looking for our chef on our show in the first season, we put out this big broadcast and a lot of people responded and some really top people responded. And she was a personal chef at the time for some celebrity stars, movie stars. Mm-hmm. And she applied to be our chef on our show, and she was our number two.
Way.
She was my first choice, but we decided on a male, and so that's why she didn't get it. But it was fun to see. I knew the name, and when I saw the movie, I immediately realized it was the same person. So I'm glad to see she's done so well and followed her dreams, because it was a great movie. I just love that movie. I'm going to recommend it to everybody.
Okay, and this has nothing to do with gardening, but for those listening, like that just to me, especially as a performer, like everything happens for a reason. What if you weren't, what if she was your first choice and you guys offered it to her? She probably would have never started that farm and like kind of made the history that she made. So, and documentary would have been never made. So that's kind of wild. Wow. Everything happens for a reason.
I love that.
That's so real. Plant friends, we are supported today by Espoma Organics. Espoma Organics, my favorite soil company, is a 90-year-old, family-owned and operated, four generations of families dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and most importantly, the planet. I have been using Espoma's potting soils, houseplant fertilizer, and horticultural sprays for more than a year, and I can't say enough wonderful things about them. Their houseplant fertilizer is what got me hooked on the company, but I love their soils as well. So when I first started out transitioning from plant killer to plant lady, I really just didn't care much about soil, didn't know anything about soil, and I would just grab whatever bag was closest to me on my way to checkout. And then as my plant collection and my knowledge for plant care started to grow, I started grabbing for Espoma Organics on the shelf instead of whatever potting soil was closest to me, because I knew that Espoma made all organic products, and I also really appreciated their eco-friendly packaging and their family business vibe. I love that their soils are all enhanced with performance-boosting ingredients like mycotone, yucca extract, alfalfa meal, kelp meal, feather meal, earthworm casings. Am I sounding fancy yet? They take all those fancy sounding ingredients and put them into the soils to make our plants as happy as they possibly can be. So I use their general potting mix for most of my plants. I love their cactus soil for my succulents. And when I'm feeling fancy, sometimes I'll mix a little bit of the cactus soil into the potting soil if I want a little bit more aeration. And if you guys like making your own custom potting mixes, which I know a lot of our plant community likes, Espoma also sells bags of perlite, bags of peat moss. I've mixed their orchid mix into the potting mix before. So you can become a mad scientist and make your own mix or do what I do and really just use their general potting soil for most of your plants. If you're interested in learning more about Espoma Organics' more than 70 organic indoor and outdoor products for plant people, visit espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or click the link in the show notes to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Amazon store, where I have compiled all of my favorite Espoma products that you can try and order on Amazon if that's easier for you. So once again, visit espoma.com to learn more, or check the link in the show notes to order your own. Okay, plant friends, here's Joe. We are going to talk about two steps for fun fall garden projects, things we can grow in the fall those listening are like me and don't even know where to start. And then other projects that if maybe you don't want to grow things, but you want to prep for spring, like what we can think about. Well, you and I have been going back and forth with all the things that you could grow. You have a great blog that goes over like 20 something different varieties and how to do it. And we'll link it in the show notes. But I thought we could break it down between a few plants that we could grow for quick results, a few plants that are more interesting, might be fun projects to grow with kids, or if you're just interested in seeing something quick and fun. And then holiday harvest, baby. Like how fun would it be to serve Brussels sprouts at dinner and say, oh yeah, by the way, these are from my garden. With herbs or something. So why don't we do... I think as a gardener, quick results to me are pretty important. Yeah. Like I'm going to want to see, you know, I'm going to want to harvest and see the rewards for my fall game. So what would you suggest for those?
Well, my first choice would be lettuce because, you know, all you do is sprinkle a pack of lettuce seeds in a container on top of the soil and water it in. You don't even have to cover it up. And then in 3 days, that lettuce seed is germinated. And now these little, you know, sprouts are coming up. And I'm not talking about head lettuce here. I'm talking about leaf lettuce. And you don't have to wait until it's a certain size before you start cutting off the outside leaves to use it in your salad. It's called cut and come again, basically, is the term applied to plants that you just, you know, it keeps producing even though you take from the outside edges like spinach and lettuce and arugula and things like that, because it keeps growing. So lettuce is that. And you can do that so easily in a container or, you know, in a garden bed or whatever. And there's a gazillion varieties these days and so many different colors. I mean, it's hard to mess up lettuce, right?
So for someone like me who like, I'm still like, wait, what? That's how it works. So you literally just have to, do you just take a bag of like a, you know, a little envelope of seeds and literally just spread it on top. Like you get a pot or, you know, a grow bag, whatever you're going to do, put normal soil in it, sprinkle the seeds on top and water it and just wait for it to sprout. Is there like a certain rule of thumb with how far the seeds should be separated?
No, there isn't, but it's nice to kind of spread out the seeds if you can. But if you open up the pack and you just kind of lightly shake it and try to disperse the seeds across the surface, that's really kind of what probably most people do, at least in a container environment. And then it's up to you whether or not you want to come back after things sprout and start pulling out plants in between to give some more room to the ones you want to leave behind, which is always hard to do because these perfectly growing plants are like, oh, I don't want to take those out. But sometimes you have to subtract to add, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's my kind of gardening. Just sprinkle it on and watch it grow, baby, and not have to worry that much about thinning. So great. So
that's lettuce. Cool weather. It's happy and cool weather too.
So is there any for fall, say I'm in New York. So say you're, you're experiencing a true fall, not necessarily like Atlanta, like is most lettuce going to grow? Like is spinach going to grow? Is, you know, you see the mixed bag of lettuces, like little envelopes, it's all going to grow.
It is going to grow. It'll stop, you know, once you, I don't know what the lower threshold is, but it's pretty cold. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, it's like you look at these tender lettuce leaves and you've had a hard freeze and yet the lettuce is still fine or it recovers or whatever. So it's like amazing. Like, how is that possible that something like that is that resilient? But it is. And so that's the case with lettuce and arugula, and spinach is one of those ones. I got to tell you, that's like a bulletproof plant. It takes longer for the seeds to germinate, maybe like 10 days, and then and then it's slow to get started. But once spinach is up and growing, it just goes and goes and goes until it's like hot. So it'll go right through the coldest winter, and you go out there and just cut away some leaves and bring it in for a fresh salad or a saute. And there is nothing better to me than fresh spinach. It's the sweetest. There's no spinach that you can buy that's as good as the spinach that you grow. And that's pretty much true for everything that you grow, but especially with spinach. And that's, so I would put that on the relatively quick side, but arugula, that's, you know, if you like a little spice in your, in your greens, that's like, you can't go wrong with that. And speaking of heat, mustard is one of these fast growing leaf crops that gets pretty big. You can grow everything that I'm mentioning in a container, or you can put it in the ground. But mustard, ah, man, I just love the heat of mustard. You don't need a lot. And that's one of those ones that you don't have to wait until it gets big. You can start harvesting pretty much everything I'm talking about that's a leaf crop once it's a leaf of any size, really. And then you just, like I said a minute ago, you cut from the outside, or you can bunch up the cluster of leaves with your fingers and then just take a knife and basically cut those leaves in half. So you can, there's a couple ways to do it. You can cut from the outside or cut from the top, because the growth is coming from the crown, basically that base part where the, it goes into the ground, so that the new growth is coming up between the older leaves and from the outside. So it's easy to get, you know, what you need to eat and not hurt the plant.
And is that true with harvesting for most things? Because I know with herbs too, like you're supposed to harvest from the outside and not harvest more than, is it a third or a half of each kind of stem?
Are there other good rules
of thumb for harvesting lettuce, or that was pretty much it?
Well, I mean, lettuce is just such an easy thing to just cut some
just
from the outside
cut at the
or
bottom,
from the top.
And it'll just keep growing in.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm into it. I'm into how easy that is. Okay.
Well, a lot of the farmers that you watch with the salad lettuces, they take those small clusters and they just bunch up the leaves in their fingers, and then they just take that knife and they slice through all of the leaves. And what they leave is just the base part of the plant. And then now it's going to just put up all that new growth. And in another week or two, they're going to be doing the same thing again with the same plant. And it just continues to do that.
And does kale kind of follow suit there, or is kale trickier to grow? Because I know kale is a hardy kind of colder weather plant.
Yeah, I mean, I think kale's like one of the easiest things to grow. Once you get it in the ground and it starts to establish, I want to say it's like one of the most bulletproof plants that I grow. It doesn't care how cold it gets through anything. And then there, you're just breaking off or cutting off the leaves at the stem from the base of the main stem growing up. It's kind of like kale is more like a bush, kind of a sturdy middle stem. And then all the leaves are coming out from the stem, and then you're just breaking off. Typically, it's just so easy to break them off, and you take the leaves, and then it's putting out new growth from the top. And
yeah, it's kind of almost like a rosette, not a rosette, but like with four little, like you're just kind of plucking the leaves off.
Yeah.
And do you suggest growing that from seed, or do you suggest getting small, like little seedlings at the store?
If you know you have any experience at all starting plants from seeds, I love starting everything possible from seed just because I enjoy that whole process. But let's face it, you know, we're all busy and in a hurry. And thankfully, you can go to any garden center that sells fall edibles and you'll find kale already sprouted, and you can't beat the ease and flexibility of that. So many of the times that I need to get a quick garden bed filled and I haven't gotten around to starting seed, I just go find that kale. You know, I like curly leaf kale. That's the superfood, you know, that's got all the nutrients we put in our smoothies. And that's, to me, a little bit goes a long way, because that's one of those plants that continues to grow and put out. So, you know, you only need a couple. I tend to do a whole bed of everything. I overdo everything, but a little goes a long way. And kale is one of those easy ones to grow. And yeah, get it as a seedling or a packet or a six pack, or that would do you just fine. That's already started, and then you're off and running.
Because they grow so tall that you can harvest. Yeah. They are a good option to not take up too much space if you only want to grow like one or two kind of stalks or heads or whatever you want to call it. So lettuce from seed, and it is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. So lettuce from seed, if you want a seed option, grow lettuce. If you want a seedling option, grow kale. Something else that I had a fun experience growing, I didn't grow it successfully, but it was one of my first experiences of like mm-hmm. putting together like, oh my God, seeds turn into plants was I had when I was like pre-podcast, like when I was just kind of having my plant late awakening was radish seeds because I had this like empty pot on my balcony. Someone had given me radish seeds. So I just like sprinkled it on top of the pot, like haphazardly one morning. I was like groggy, like didn't know what I was doing, like pre-coffee. And I forgot about it. And a few days later, the entire pot was like exploding with green, like, the little germinated seeds. And it's funny, I was scrolling on my personal Instagram way pre-podcast, way pre-Bloom and Grow Radio, and I had this like emotional post of like, you can just put a seed in the ground and life comes from it. And like, this is so amazing. Uh-huh. Cut to, I didn't thin them out. The radishes were horrible. Like they were not, you know, I didn't know how to grow them, so it didn't work out. But that was like a very moving experience for me. So let's teach people how to successfully grow radishes.
Yes.
They don't do what I did, but they can have the first experience and not the second.
Well, radishes are the one edible that everybody says, if you really want fast results, plant radishes, because they get to the point of forming the actual radish in 29 days. I don't know how they get exactly 29 days because it's never to me that mm-hmm. exact number, but that's what they say. So you can go from the seed to the radish itself that you're putting in your mouth in 29 days, but there's lots of different varieties of radish too, but they're all basically, you know, kind of a rooty crop that grows right at the surface or just below it. And then you can eat the leaves too. It's super easy, but you do need to thin them out, Maria, as you have learned.
Yeah.
So that you give those radishes room to spread out. It's just like carrots and beets and other things that are rooty crops. They need room to form. And if they're crowded, you're going to impact the performance of what you're wanting to harvest.
So you put the radish seeds in the soil. Once again, is it another thing where are you putting them in the soil or are you just setting them on top of the soil to germinate?
You pretty much put them right on the soil surface. I tend to lightly sprinkle a covering of soil on top just to help keep the moisture all around the seed. And so the seed has good contact all around. But, you know, all that information is on the packet. And mm-hmm. a lot of us are guilty of not even reading what's on there. But the basic mm-hmm. information that you need to know is right there on the packet. So if you have your seeds, you got the packet, and then you have the information. So just you must not have read about thinning it out. Yeah, because it probably said that on the packet.
Oh, I didn't read any of it. I had no idea what I was doing, but I enjoyed those little sprouts. So thin it out to whatever the dimension that the packet is going to say, like to sow, and sow is putting them in the ground or putting them in the soil to sow them, you know, however many inches apart. And does it make sense to sow a few seeds in each spot to have a couple of sprouts in case one seed doesn't germinate and then thin that? Is that a tactic or you don't really need to do that?
You don't need to do that with something that you're just sprinkling across the surface in like a container because you're going to have mm-hmm. enough coverage that you're going to get enough germination. So your problem is going to be, gosh, I got to pull a lot of these out. You're going to get plenty of germination. But if somebody were to plant a row of seeds, for example, or sow a row of seeds like peas or beans or whatever, I always do 2 to 3 seeds in each space because you never know if, you know, you're going to have a germination issue, but that way you've got a built-in insurance policy and then you're going to have to come back and thin out. That's typically what happens is they're all going to sprout and then you got to pick which is the strongest of the 2 or 3 that you sowed. And then the other two either go into salad or they go into compost or whatever. But yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, great. And if anyone wants to learn more about seed starting and thinning seeds, this process Joe and I are talking about, you can go back to episode 20 of Talking Tomatoes with Craig LaHoulier. He guides us through a whole seed starting, who I stole Craig because I listened to him on your show. And then I said, oh, I want Craig to come on my show. He's so smart.
He is so smart. Mm-hmm.
So what about some projects that are fun to do with kids or fun to, like, something I've been very curious about is how you can grow garlic. The Italian in me is very interested in this.
Well, garlic, if you want something easy to grow, you take that clove from that bulb and you push
that
it.
You buy at the grocery store, right?
Totally.
Like it doesn't need to be treated. Like you they go to care. Whole Foods and you get a garlic clove. Okay.
Absolutely. If you like that if you like the taste of that garlic, take the cloves off and push them into the soil 2 inches deep, cover them up, water them in, and then forget about them. I mean, really, it's that easy. And then next, as you come into next summer, as the top growth starts to look like it's dying, that's exactly mm-hmm. what you want it to do, because that's the indication that the bulb is ready to be harvested. And then you just pull the whole thing out of the ground, and here comes this big, huge clump of garlic cloves, which is beautiful. And then you set that under in a protected area, free, you know, outside where it's not going to get rained on, but you need to have it air out so it cures for a couple of weeks. And then you've got garlic for the rest of the year, and it's a beautiful thing. So it's not the quickest project, you know, if kids are, they're so impatient, you know, you're planting that in the fall and you're not harvesting until the next summer. So, but it is cool to come back to it. It is totally cool to come back to it.
And is, so the clove, is it going to shoot something through the soil? It's going to shoot that little green like spout, or it's pretty much going to be under the soil primarily?
It's going to sprout up the new growth. It's going to provide the leaf surface that produces the energy for that bulb to form.
Oh, okay. So it's going to grow like a full plant. See, these are like my most insane questions ever, but I have never seen it grown before. So I don't know. But
so it's going to grow a little.
Yeah. Right. So it's going to grow like a plant above the soil to photosynthesize to then grow the bulb under the soil.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Cool. All right. I'm going to try that. That'll be fun to just stick some cloves in the soil and see what they come. Since I'm traveling, I'm not home anyway. So by the time I'm done with tour, I'll come back and I'll have garlic.
Totally do that. Some other ones that are kind of along that same line, you can do that with mm-hmm. onions the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can do them from seeds, or you can buy the seeds that have already sprouted. They're called sets, and you can plant those in the ground, and those take, if you want the big bulbed onion, that's going to take until next summer too, but you can harvest them along the way as chives or, you know, baby onions or whatever, and speed up the process. But it's similar to how garlic works. And then, you know, the other, talking about fun projects for kids, and none of these are fast with the exception of radishes, but what you can plant so it grows underground, like potatoes or maybe beets or sweet potatoes would be another one, or carrots, you know, where really what you see is the top growth, and you mm-hmm. don't really know what's happening underground. And a lot of these mm-hmm. kids, they don't really know where this stuff comes from. They just see it on their plate in the school lunch line or dinner, but they've never been exposed to how it really grows. So when you take them out and they planted carrot seeds and they watch the top growth, and then comes that day where you pull that carrot out, and these days, you know, you get these beautiful rainbow colors of carrots, and you pull that out of the ground, you rinse it off, and you get them to eat that carrot right then and there. It's the sweetest thing in the world, and you watch their face light up. So I don't know if it's a fun project for kids, but it's a fun project for adults to watch the kids, the look on their face when they're eating that carrot. So
also with carrots, it's like, how many kids don't realize that carrots even have green on top, you know, because so many times you get them with the greens cut off. So that is so important. So carrots are another three season. You plant them in the fall, and then you harvest in the summer.
For example, then this weekend, I'm going to plant carrot seeds. And mm-hmm. I'm going to be harvesting carrots in a few months, maybe 2 months from now, 3 months. And the other good thing about carrots, they're happy to just hang out underground until you're ready for them too. They like store themselves. They're just roots, really, is what they are. And that's what they are, edible roots. You just get them when you want. But it takes about 60 days for them to be ready to eat. And then you eat them when you're ready. And that's an example, my friend who's in Halifax, you know, that's the thing she goes out to in the dead of winter under, you know, 3 feet of snow, pushes away the snow, reaches into her cold frame or into the ground and pulls out carrots for dinner. And that's how that works.
Oh, I love that. Well, and I love that it does have a faster growing, a one season lifespan, where you can put it in the ground and then harvest it in that, within that one season.
Yes.
Now, I remember I volunteered at a farm, an organic farm, last year, and they had us weeding carrots, and it was grueling work. Was that just because I was on a farm that was growing like full rows and rows and rows of carrots? Or is that something you have to look towards? Because the carrot greens grew so much slower than the weeds around it that we had to pull the weeds out because they were like entirely shading the plants.
That's tough. It's unavoidable. You know, you've got this competition from weed seeds all around, whether it's carrots or anything else, and it is grueling, but it's, you know, and sometimes you have to do it by hand too, where you're right down there in between, especially when those carrots are young, but you have to remove the competition. And those carrots, they need the light and the nutrients and the water. A foreign body like weeds are growing around it. They too want those same things. And there's only a limited amount of all of that. And you want all of that to go to the carrots and not to the weeds. So that's the dirty 30. That's the part of, you know, gardening or farming or whatever, that's not that fun, but it's super important. But it, allows you to have that 70% of the rest of it that makes it all worth the while. So
totally,
you have to do it.
And what about with these, all of these things we've mentioned, the watering, are we just letting like Mother Nature rain and water, or do we have to keep our eyes with these root vegetables? Do they need a certain amount of water? Because I guess we're watering their vegetative growth kind of above the soil. How does that work?
Yeah, you just want to keep an eye on even, consistent moisture. But, you know, I have drip irrigation, so I do have watering on autopilot. But here's the thing about this. In the wintertime, when you've got, you know, freezing conditions, you don't want your lines to freeze either, or your timers to crack and so forth. So it's really more of a matter of keeping an eye on it and just making sure there's a decent amount of moisture. But honestly, when the temperatures cool off, the stress on the plants is less. So the demand for consistent water isn't as high as it is in the summertime. So these plants can get by with good periods in between rain events or when you water them. And the other thing about, you know, my big thing about soil and why it's so important, a million reasons, but one of them is really healthy soil has the ability to hold water much longer than dirt or poor soil. So there's the way this good soil is, it's like a sponge. It just retains water and moisture, and yet it doesn't retain too much. So it's kind of like the perfect world. So the quick answer is just keep an eye on it, but don't feel the need to be out there watering it all the time because these crops don't
Just kind of keeping it evenly moist. And like with our house plants in the winter, we end up watering less frequently. We're probably going to not have to water as frequently as our summer tomatoes and herbs, because that heat isn't, you know, evaporating the water out of the soil as quickly too. Oh, what about Brussels sprouts?
That's the best ever. Brussels sprouts are kind of slow to grow, but they form those, you know, those sprouts on the stalk, and it takes a while, but you need cold weather for those sprouts to taste really good and sweet. So they are actually made better when they're exposed to a couple nights of frost. And then if you time it right, like you should be planting your Brussels sprouts right now, and then hoping to get, you know, a really awesome harvest for Thanksgiving or Christmas at the latest. But they're very cold tolerant. So either Thanksgiving or Christmas, depending on your timing of when you plant, you'll have just the best. I love Brussels sprouts.
Me too. Which way, I love Brussels sprouts, but ideally with bacon. But so the carrots and the Brussels sprouts could be fun things to plant in the fall and then harvest by Thanksgiving or Christmas or use in the holidays, maybe along with a little sage.
Yes. So keep in mind with carrots and Brussels sprouts, because you really, it's not so much the leaf that you're eating. It's not the leaf that you're eating. Mm-hmm. You're dependent on the output. Like in the carrot, it's the root, and on Brussels sprouts, it's the sprout. And that takes time to develop after the plant gets established and the leaves are there to do, to create those things. Versus a couple other things that are great for holiday harvest would be like spinach. We talked about that. And then kale, those leafy crops where as soon as there's a leaf, you can harvest it. So you've got that to add to the mix. And those are delicious in the wintertime too on those holiday tables. And, you know, even if you don't have the Brussels sprouts or the carrots ready, you've got the spinach and the kale. So another option for you that's quicker.
Try it all and see what happens. So this has been awesome. This is a very, we've given listeners a lot of options. So pick your favorite and then let me and Joe know what you end up growing this fall. Tag us on Instagram in your harvests. We want to see what you grow. For people who aren't necessarily interested in growing in the fall, but might be interested in still dedicating some time, mental energy to their gardens, I know that you are a hyper-organized gardener and kind of a tech-savvy gardener. So you and I have been kind of talking about, well, if you don't want to grow, you could certainly take that downtime to plan and organize for the next growing season. So can you walk me through like what your personal kind of rhythm is with the fall in terms of planning and organizing?
Yeah, seed catalogs are like your best friend. And of course, you can get all that information online. So that information is accessible 24/7. But what happens is time gets away from us. Life gets in the way. We're so busy. And the next thing you know, when it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I need to order my seeds because there's some cool things I want to grow. But you don't do that until like early spring or even late winter. Well, a lot of these most popular things are already sold out because everybody else wants those too. And so the biggest missed opportunity is to not use some of that time over the holidays when things are nice and kind of calm and start just perusing through the catalogs or online, these seed companies, and seeing what looks good and then reading the descriptions, because that's the other thing you can do. You can educate yourself to know what is going to grow in your area or what you might want to try eating. Or if you're in just containers, you want to look for those varieties that are suited for containers that don't get too big. But all of that information is there in the catalogs and online, and you just have to take a little bit of time. And I'm telling you, it's fun and you learn a lot. I mean, it's super educational, and the pictures just make you want to order everything. And that's the thing, you have to exercise some constraint, but that's a really good use of time. And then the other thing I do is I have an online journal. Basically, the app that I use is called Day One. And I love it just because, you know, it has the functionality that you can take pictures of anything and everything. And I think that's so important because, you know, you may never go back to that picture ever again, but it costs you nothing to take that picture and have it stored in your Day One journal under your gardening folder. And then you can come back to it. Or if you have a problem, I especially like it for new things I'm trying to grow that maybe I just want to document. So in case I need to refer back, I want to see how big it got or what kind of pests and diseases it got. Or I can transcribe it. It has dictation functionality. So you can just talk into your phone and it transcribes it. So you have those, you know, that an archive of whatever it is you wanted to say about that plant. And I like to, you know, get in the habit of doing that every day or every other day or whatever, whenever. It's up to you. It's your journal. But that is such a powerful tool. And it may not seem that useful in the moment until you want to go back and refer to that. And then it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I did that. It just makes you feel empowered. And so whether you write down stuff or you're all digital, that's a really good thing to do, especially the picture taking aspect of it. It keeps it all organized.
So you're taking notes throughout the growing season on the progress of all of your plants. And then in the fall, you're reviewing those notes, taking like overarching ideas, thoughts, kind of prepping for, you know, learning from your mistakes if you've documented mistakes that you're going to bring into the next season with you.
Correct. And sometimes, you know, I never even refer back to some of those notes. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I always believe it's better to have them and not need them than to need them and not have them.
Yeah. Is Day One a gardening app or it's just
no, it's not a gardening app. It's a journal. It's an online journal, but okay. You make it what you want. And so I've got, you know, a seed starting folder and a vegetable folder and a tomato folder. And, you know, like during tomato growing season, I documented every harvest. I took pictures of each tomato variety and I had a ruler by it and, you know, wrote about it and talked about how it tasted. So I can go back because I'm not going to remember 43 different plants.
And, that's, you know, so real. That's so real. That happened with my mom's garden last year. Yeah. We planted all sorts of tomatoes. We had no idea. I mean, we ate them all, but we had no idea which one was which. And correct. So the following year, like, she just kind of like picks and chooses whatever she wants because we don't, she doesn't keep records of it. Oh, I love that. And I also know that in this community, even with houseplants, people love like keeping spreadsheets, Google Docs of like their plants and their plant care. Yep. So it might be fun to even just track your houseplant care that way too, just throughout year round.
Absolutely. And like if you're experimenting with lights or soil or, you know, whatever, that's just, you know, creating some sort of record that you can go back to, and it's searchable. That's the other thing about this digital technology is that you don't have to. It just makes it so easy. Not, you know, there's no reason not to do it, especially when you can just search by keyword.
I love that. And you looked to your community for their garden organizing tips because your community is primarily outdoors, and you put together this unbelievable blog with your community suggestions, and you got some nerds in your, I mean, I have nerds in my community too, but you've got some real nerds in your community. The stuff that they came up with was mind blowing, just with like the one guy who like got the Google Earth picture of his property and then traced it and then broke each down by square footage. So there's like on this blog, which Plant Friends, I will put in the show notes for this episode, you have every level of what type of personality you are. If you're like relaxed, this is how you take care, you know, this is how you document. If you want to like go the extra mile, this is what you do. So I can't recommend checking out that blog and podcast episode of Joe's enough.
I love my geeks. I love my garden geek friends.
Me too. I love my plant friend, plant nerds. So I want to talk about the fact that you have been such a mentor to me and I've learned so much from you and I'm just thankful for your plant friendship. When I was in Atlanta, Joe came and took me to breakfast in the plantiest, most wild. Mm. What was that place's name?
R. Thomas.
Oh my God. If you're in Atlanta, it's so planty and so fun. Where can we find you, Joe?
JoeGardner.com is the place that has all those blog posts and those podcasts that you mentioned, but the Joe Gardner Show, that's my podcast, and that's everywhere that you consume your podcast. And, you know, we're up 120-something episodes now, and we come out with a new show every Thursday.
Every Thursday, you have such kick-ass guests, too.
Thank you. Yeah, we do. And they keep getting better, too, I have to say. Mm-hmm. So we're happy with that. And then Instagram is where I am on social mostly, and that's just at Joe Gardner.
Okay, cool. So at Joe Gardner, all those links will be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Until next time, my friend, I can't wait to have you back on in the spring for some more gardening lessons. All right, plant friends, that is my conversation with Joe. I love conversations with outdoor gardeners because I feel like I learn something about my indoor collection always, because when we're learning about outdoor gardening, we're learning about how to put plants where they're supposed to be naturally. And we can take those lessons and incorporate them into how we approach our indoor gardening practice, which is not as natural as outdoors. But I'm so thankful to Joe. He is so freaking knowledgeable. The blogs that we mentioned on the fall garden projects and organizing your garden, and that organizing blog is so much more detailed than what we talked about, are linked in the show notes. Head over to joegardner.com and click around because he has so many amazing resources. He also has online gardening courses, which you can check out on his website. The gardening basics course is currently closed right now, but stay tuned because I'm going to take it when it reopens in January. And I'm thinking that maybe if you guys are interested, we can like get a little group going and take the course together and see what we learn. Thank you again to our Patreon plant friends. And thank you to Espoma Organics and A Floating Bed and Breakfast for supporting today's episode. For more information on the unbelievable planty houseboats for A Floating Bed and Breakfast, click the link in the show notes, theloiselaine.com. Check those Airbnb listings out, and you can write Nicole for 20% off if you tell her Maria sent you. And if you are interested in upgrading your soil game, your plant game, head over to espoma.com to learn about their over 70 organic indoor and outdoor gardening products, which are unbelievable. Or click the link in the show notes to check out my Amazon storefront where I've compiled my top Espoma products that I love and use. Okay, my sweet plant friends, until next time, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind the scenes, sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you are loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing.